Good afternoon. This is Mary Hartnett. You are listening to The Exchange. On today's program, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, the status of the virus in Woodbury County, and also what's going on in Sioux City Public Schools with that school shutdown and some of the efforts the school is making to try and get some voluntary classwork out to students. I know I just got some of it today for my daughter via email. So there's a lot going on with the schools. First, though, we are going to be talking to a woman here in Siouxland who is working to help create face masks for, especially for healthcare workers who have seen a shortage of those masks. I recently talked to Joy Mahon about how this program is working and how she's working with volunteers.
The community has really stepped up, and those people that are volunteering and helping, I mean, it's just really amazing. The community that we have. And
how many people have you had volunteer?
I don't have an exact number. We have so many volunteers doing different parts of the project, and it has happened so fast that actually what I started doing was I have a container at the front of my studio, and I have some cards there, and I've started having people put their names on it and what part they're doing, because we have some people that come in and they just drop off things, or other people that come in and they pick up a spool of elastic and they take it home and they cut into specific lengths and then they bring it back, or we have some sewers that are making masks at home, but they don't put elastic in, and so they're dropping those off here. And I would maybe say that right now we have probably 50 people. We have some volunteers that come to the studio location, and right now I'm working in a dual location. So we have my studio, and then we're also utilizing the dance studio, which is next door. And so we have just spaced apart workstations there, where volunteers that do, you know, sewing or even non-sewing steps come and help out too. So, and I think actually the more I think about it, there's probably way more than 50 people, I'm sure.
It's kind of an amazing thing that how much just an ordinary person can do to make a difference, right?
Absolutely. I just said to one of my volunteers this morning, I said, you know, aside from the circumstances, it's been really neat in just the last 2 weeks. And I know we're social distancing, but even when you stand apart and someone just drops off, how many new people that I have met from our community, and amazing people. And it just blows my mind. And it's a neat thing, really.
Do you know how many masks you've made so far that you've completed?
It happened so fast initially, and because we have different masks in different parts of production, it's not like, you know, one gets done and then we, you know, chalk it off on the board, because for right now, you know, I have a pile of 200 sitting right in front of me right now that need pinned together, and then we have many more than that in the studio next door. And so I do think that in the next week or so, we're going to really, like, we're really to the point where we're starting to really kind of make a machine out of it. So obviously you start with a few, but as you make it more efficient, you know, then you can kind of count that. But what I can tell you is that the goal that we're shooting for is about 7,000 in under 3 weeks. And the reason for that number is because that was a specific one just for Unity Point that was rolled down based on some needs and how they project using the mask. And so they have three different areas that they're trying to implement that. And so I have to say that kudos to them for really standing up in the community and helping with this. But I do know that although the ones that are dropped off here and that I'm kind of facilitating materials for, they're going to Unity Point, but they're distributing them through other clinics and other needs. So, you know, it's not just for them, it's for the community.
And that was Joy Mahon, the owner of Designer Joy's Sewing Factory in Sioux City. Mahon and a small army of volunteers are now creating thousands of face masks, primarily for healthcare personnel at Unity Point St. Luke's. Well, now we're going to be turning to what's going on in Woodbury County with Siouxland District Health. On the phone is the Deputy Director and Director of Laboratory Services for Siouxland District Health, Tyler Brock. Tyler, hello, how are you?
I am doing pretty well.
All right, it's good to talk to you. You know, I heard today that there are a total of 11 cases of COVID-19 in Woodbury County right now. Now, to me, that doesn't feel like that's a lot of cases, but of course, this thing is kind of insidious in how it spreads.
Yeah, we're sitting at 11 cases in the county right now. I mean, it's all you got to do is look at the map, and you can see that Western Iowa has been a lot quieter than the eastern half of the state. You know, we still believe that the possibility exists for us to have a significant surge in cases as well. However, you know, we do feel like we have a pretty good handle on where we're at right now. Even though our case numbers are low, our hospitals are in good shape right now. We're getting people tested that need to be tested. And even with that, you know, 97% of the sick folks that we're testing are negative. So, you know, we feel pretty good about where we are right now. But, you know, everybody's working really hard, whether it be the health department, whether it be hospitals, doctor's offices, businesses, private individuals. Everybody's working really hard to keep it this way right now.
So how much testing is going on?
As much testing as needs to be. If someone is sick and their doctor decides that they need to be tested, they're tested. We're not testing well people. So there's no intent for the entire county to get a test. That's not necessary in any way, shape, or form. And honestly, even if we were to test the whole county, that test would only be good for the day the test was done, and it wouldn't say anything about the future. So there's actually a lot of testing being done. I mean, we've reported out, you know, 100 this is a rough number, but 125, 135 total tests just in the last 2 days have been reported, and that's just completed tests. That's not the ones that are still pending results and that kind of a thing. So honestly, I have zero problems with how much testing is being done. If someone contacts their doctor and their doctor determines that a test needs to be done, a test is done.
Yeah. Is the county releasing possible contact points in the area? I know some other counties are doing that.
I'm sorry, Mary. I had a hard time hearing that.
Is the county releasing possible, I guess, what we would call contact points in the area?
Contacts, you know, contacts of cases?
Yes, that's it.
No, we won't be releasing that kind of information. That's based entirely on individual case counts and things like that. And we work with those people directly to make sure that they're isolated, to make sure that the cases are isolated, make sure that their close contacts are isolated. And so, yeah, there's not a lot of intent to put a number on that. You know, it's something that we could consider in the future, but that's not our plans currently.
I guess finally, some are calling on Governor Reynolds to have stricter regulations, and Dr. Anthony Fauci from the CDC has said he doesn't believe that Iowa needs to do that, that Iowa is doing a good job. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Well, I mean, if you're asking for an opinion, I mean,
yeah,
from a health department perspective, I think that Iowa is doing an excellent job. I think most of the things that we are doing as far as social distancing and the things that we've closed and the schools and everything that we've done is basically in line with what a lot of states' shelter in place orders are. So, you know, I guess I'll let other people decide whether, you know, they support exactly what the governor's position on this is or what it isn't. But the logic that she's using is sound, and it's based on a lot of the information coming from the state health department. And we see nothing here locally that would feel like we need to do something like that. So we feel like people are, for the most part, complying voluntarily, and it seems to be, you know, it seems to be adequate for where we are in the situation for Iowa.
Well, Tyler, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Good day. And that was Tyler Brock, the Deputy Director and Director of Lab Services for Siouxland District Health. This week, I also talked with Dr. Paul Gosman, the president of Western Iowa Tech Community Colleges. Colleges and universities all over the region are also closed to students on campus. They're now offering online courses. Western Iowa Tech extended its closure to May 14th or the end of the spring term. I asked Terry Merle about how the college has managed to offer basic knowledge courses and also some hands-on courses online during this time.
We have a process together of different levels of where we can go. And so, yes, we had been planning for that to be something. And, yes, we were listening to the governor's press conference at 2:30 that day. And when she made the move for all the schools to go to delay till April 30th, we decided to go ahead and act. And it really wasn't realistic for us to think that we could bring people back the last 2 weeks and get everything squared away. So to allow our faculty to plan, we decided to make the change just for the entire semester.
Is it tough to move all courses to an online status? Because I know taking any just regular face-to-face course, it takes some work to get it there.
Yeah, it's extremely difficult, especially depending upon the discipline. You know, traditionally, you've not been able to do that with health sciences, although all the accrediting bodies of the health sciences programs have been working with all schools on how they can move more of their learning online, there's online simulators, try to do as much clinical as possible. Depending on our health science program, there are still some clinical environments that would be available, and we're working with our faculty to figure out what's the reasonable clinical environment to put our students into. You know, we kind of sit within the, I guess, same thing as anybody else, is what's the learning value versus the threat to exposure? Certainly we're not forcing any students to do clinical. If they don't believe it's safe, all of our students can wait and we can do clinical at a different time. For those who would like to have that clinical learning experience yet this semester, we're trying to find clinical environments for them to do.
Oh, really? I was wondering how that would work. And I know you also have welding there. You've got HVAC. You've got people working, learning how to work on cars. Is that sort of the same situation with them?
Yeah, with all of our lab-based programs, the faculty are trying to find out what can they do online. You know, there are some welding simulators that can be done online. Certainly all their lecture can be done. There are some students who actually have welders at home and can do some projects and submit videos of those projects or send in the work of those projects to show the faculty what they've done. But there are certainly students who do not. We're going to be pretty lenient with our incomplete process. And so students can do everything that they can do now, and then hopefully this summer we'll be able to bring students on campus if they got an incomplete, and they can complete the lab portion that they would need to have done to complete their course.
Do you think this experience will inform you in future decisions about maybe which classes could do more online or maybe be hybrid courses that perhaps you hadn't considered? I've been asking a few colleges that.
Sure. I think this will change the way students take courses in the future. It'll change the way we teach courses in the future. I think certainly we may see a much higher demand for online courses from our students due to this, as maybe some students are exposed to online or some students have maybe decided that they like this format better than they like the face-to-face. I think some faculty members are being exposed to online who've never maybe put their material online before and may find that online learning environment is something that works for them when they had never expected that to happen. So I think definitely we'll see a change in education through this, maybe a push to maybe not fully online, but more content online than has been in the past, definitely.
So is there anything else you'd like to say about what you guys have gone through with this COVID-19 or, you know, looking ahead to the future maybe?
Well, I think first of all, for me in my position, my first responsibility is for safety and security of our students. And so it made it pretty easy when I put that in perspective to make the decision to do what we did. We want to make sure that our students are safe and feel like that they have a safe learning environment. And then I think beyond that, it's a matter of how do you deal with all the details of making such a drastic change that we made for our students and still trying to create the best learning environment possible for them.
That was Western Iowa Tech Community College President Terry Merle saying the campus will be closed through May 14th to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. All coursework is now being done online. Some of the hands-on courses are offering workarounds so students can get their hours in for this semester. And now online with us, we have the superintendent of the Sioux City Community School District, Paul Gosman. Paul, hello.
Hello there. How are you today?
I'm very good. I was talking to Terry Merle, president of Western Iowa Tech, about, you know, trying to have first and foremost the safety and security of students on campus. And I was thinking about the public schools. And I think, obviously, that's your primary goal as well.
That is, obviously, we're, you know, watching this critical time in this critical situation. We have a number of students that are actually Western Iowa Tech students as well. So I was listening to Terry's comments, and they're such a great partner to us. But as we work through our system with our students in grades kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, we are doing everything we can to keep them safe, but to continue to feed them both nutritionally and academically during this time.
And you've been offering lunches, free lunches every day. Also academically, I know I just got an email with a whole packet of fifth grade information for my daughter, and we're having a Zoom session, and I was really glad to see that. I bet a lot of parents will be glad to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just came from one of our food delivery locations. We have 26 of those or 27 of those at this time, where we're literally serving 6,000 to 7,000 meals a day. And I was out at those sites today because being Wednesday, it's our first time that we're delivering academic packets to students. And that's one way that they can be acquired is at those food delivery stations. You mentioned another way, which is to receive them via email. And we also are welcoming parents to schedule an appointment to come pick it up as well if neither of the other two options work for them. At the secondary level or middle school and high school level, we're doing almost all of that virtually, so in a digital format through the software that we have for digital delivery of instruction.
I know you have a lot of special education students throughout the district, and you'll continue to work with them as well.
We will, actually, and so we're pushing those special education services or even other special services like English as a Second Language service and other items out to families who request them and need them. You know, our learning, continuous learning program that we have right now is voluntary, but I have noted even on the first day of it that we've got a strong percentage of families who are picking up materials and beginning to work with their students on those materials, and for that we're very thankful.
I know you've expressed some concern about, you know, the class of 2020 graduating, not being able to have a graduation, not being able to have a prom. I mean, these are such big things in a student's life, in a young person's life before they move on. Are there any alternatives? I've heard of some schools having virtual graduation, a virtual prom, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, we're looking into that right now. We've talked about the possibility of putting an extension in and doing something at a later time, but we have so many students who, you know, upon graduation, as an example, are moving on to that next phase of their life, whether that's the workforce or a two-year school, a four-year school, or whatever. And so at the moment, we've committed to maintaining our original schedule and doing everything that we can to make those events as special as possible. I know just just a week ago, I was myself, I happen to be a musician. I'm a former band director, and I participated in a virtual twerp dance, one of the dances that would have normally happened in one of our high schools. And so I played my drum set to a song that would have been played in my own twerp, in 1984, just as a way through social media to try and make that special for those kids. Certainly we'll try to do the same thing with prom. I don't expect that we'll get, thousands of people gathered together at the Tyson Event Center at the end of May for commencement exercises, but I do expect that we will do something very unique and special for that class. And I do feel badly for that class of 2020. Their senior year certainly is unique.
Yeah, we haven't really seen anything like this in my memory or, going back into the 20th century. So it's very hard to quantify what this means. I guess finally, my daughter asked me yesterday, something I never thought she'd ask, when do we go back to school? And they get lonely for it. They don't think they will. Do you think students will be able to get back to school?
I hold out some hope that we'll be able to see them a little bit before the end of the school year arrives. Right now we're planning on having them back in school on May 1st, but I think that's, just an item of hope right now. I can't imagine, based on the data that I'm seeing, that we'll be able to start up then. Certainly a lot of states around us have already canceled the rest of the school year. Our governor has chosen to do this in shorter increments, and I don't criticize her for that. I appreciate that she's leaving open the possibility that some other decision could be made over time. But right now, we're planning on May 1st, but we're also preparing for the fact that it could be extended again and maybe even extended through the end of the school year. Our last day of school is June 2nd. Either way, whether we've come back or not, we're planning on June 2nd being our last day of school.
Well, Dr. Gosman, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we can check in with you again and see what's going on in a few weeks.
Yeah, happy to help, and thanks for all the work you do to help us get that message out.
All right, thank you. And that was Dr. Paul Gosman, the Sioux City School Superintendent, talking about the closure of the district, services being offered to students in the interim, including school lunches and voluntary classwork. You are listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. Well, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has sparked some intense criticism after refusing to issue a statewide shelter-at-home order. State health officials broke down the state into six regions. They're looking at age, care facility outbreaks, and the total number of cases to determine what to do. A rating of 10 is needed for the governor to issue an official order. Iowa didn't meet that yet. State Representative Chris Hall told Siouxland Public Media Sheila Brummer the governor's actions don't go far enough. He also talked about what the Iowa legislature is working on while the State House remains closed.
I think the most important thing right now is to provide Iowans with clear guidance. I think that the additional closure of public spaces is an important step, but I don't believe that it's going far enough to really follow the guidelines set forth by the CDC and recommendations by the Iowa Board of Medicine, who have universally called for a statewide shelter in place. We still are able to go out in the community. You can look around and see that people are continuing to use public space and, through no bad intentions of their own, are still putting others, especially older Iowans, at risk. So I think the governor needs to issue clear guidance. I think that includes a shelter-in-place order. And I think that the additional restrictions that she's made are fine, but it still kind of sends a mixed message without having that official guidance and order extended.
Now, she claims she has something in place that's even stricter than some of the states that actually have a shelter-in-place order.
I think the optics and the message for the public are just as important, though. The public needs to understand through that clear guidance that they should be staying home. It's not just if you're not feeling well. It's not just if you're, needing a convenience or a trip to the grocery store. People need to really understand from the highest level of public leadership that this is an order that is designed to keep the public at home and keep them all safe. And I think that the words and way that it's phrased also matters quite a bit. I think more should be done, and I'll say I'm very sensitive. I've spent the last couple of weeks visiting with a lot of business owners, sole proprietors, people who are being impacted by the economic shift and toward this more, I guess, kind of shelter in place type of feel. But business owners understand that this is something we need to do right now, but it's important that we do it promptly and we take it seriously, because the faster that we get through this period, the faster that Iowans will be back at work and supporting the economy. If we kind of continue to take this middle road where the governor seems to hope that she can get the best of both worlds, so long as we're taking this middle path, it's not going to work effectively for the public health need, but it's also not going to get us through this so that we can help to support local businesses in a fuller, more robust form.
And when it comes to work, what is happening with the Iowa legislature? Everything is shut down till the end of April. Normally your session would be wrapping up soon, but since you've been suspended so long, what are you guys doing behind the scenes?
Legislators are continuing to visit very actively and often. We are in constant contact with each other as well as with leadership of the majority party. We're doing a lot of good work right now, mainly in helping route information out to the public. We're trying to make sure that business owners have what they need in terms of applications and additional assistance programs. We're also trying to make sure that workers and families who have been impacted by all of these different closures have hopefully the access to childcare resources and educational material and other things to help them continue parenting while they work. I believe that the legislature is going to stay in an adjourned format for the foreseeable future. Right now, we've extended it through at least the end of April, but we do have some unfinished business that we'll have to come back for. I suspect that sometime maybe midsummer, the legislature could reconvene. We would probably have an abbreviated 2 weeks or so that we would try to wrap up budget negotiations and some final business before we adjourn for the rest of the year.
Now, you said there are still a few issues that the legislature does have to work on, and that includes the budget. Is there anything major that people need to know about when it comes to what the state's doing? I know a lot of it's probably in flux now with everything with the health crisis and even potentially the economic crisis.
It's important that the legislature gives a little bit of time before we really re-engage budget negotiations. Typically, the state has economic indicators and data that we follow, and we try to use that data to better understand what our revenue and budget will look like. Because some of that economic data actually takes a few weeks of lag time, we don't have good enough data right now to really understand what's happening in the state's economy, where we have seen high upticks of unemployment, and how that's going to affect our overall GDP. So in a few weeks' time, we hope that we'll have good enough data to look at that has shown a little bit of time and how this has evolved in the state's economy. And, you know, 4 to 6 weeks from now, we should have that data in hand and hopefully have some reference. When you look at how other states are approaching this, most of them expect a downturn in state revenues anywhere between 15 to 25%, which is a big number. It could be more than $1 billion in the state of Iowa. But we have a lot of federal dollars that are coming in. We know that those are helping to offset the initial costs to public health that we really need right now. And we also know that some of those funds are going to help fill the gaps of where dollars might be lost due to an economic downturn. The goal is to make this economic moment as short as possible so that we have people at home being safe, looking out for their health and the safety of the public first, and then we get them back to work as soon as possible. So hopefully the economy only briefly kind of hits a pause button more than it really turns into a long-term economic event.
Now, I know the tax deadline was pushed back. Does that impact what the state does as far as budget or money coming in? Because you guys do a fiscal year that starts the 1st of July.
Mm-hmm. Right now, we are still seeing most people are filing taxes as they would normally. Because of the way that the state's fiscal year runs, we are 9 of 12 months already completed for fiscal year 20. And so we have a good sense of the amount of revenue we'll receive for this year, and it's more a question of what the state budget will have to look like for the coming year. People are filing taxes, which is good. Hopefully they're getting a little bit of a return from both the state and federal government so that they have really a little bit of extra cushion right now, maybe some extra dollars that they're able to spend on home purchases and groceries. But people are still filing their taxes. We think that the state budget is likely to take a dip, but we also have funds that will help plug those gaps as they see fit.
And like you said, Chris, the number one thing, it's health and people's lives.
The number one thing right now is for the public to be looking out for themselves, for the health of their family, and for the public. Staying home is as long as it's already felt like for a lot of people, it is the safest and best approach to this, and it's the thing that's going to help put people back to work most quickly.
Now, doing a little bit of research on this, there were some medical providers who are a little concerned, too, that after we shelter in place and that's released and loosened, we could actually have another run on people getting sick as well.
That's the hard part about this virus. So much of it is still unknown. We're learning new things every day and each week about how the virus is spread, how some of the, bigger risks present themselves, and how it travels, across public spaces. And so with all the question marks and unknowns that still exist, it's safest for people just to really distance themselves, stay to themselves and their family and the people that are in that one household. And the longer that they're able to do that, the safer it is for everyone.
And that was State Representative Chris Hall of Sioux City talking about efforts to contain COVID-19 in Sioux City and also trying to deal with the economic effects of that. The director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said that the governors of Iowa and Nebraska were doing a very good job responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. Chris Hall was worried about the fact that we did not have a very strict stay-at-home order, but Fauci said that we have in place a lot of things that are totally compatible with what every other state is now doing. You're listening to The Exchange, and I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, farmers have been through a couple of tough years with commodity prices dropping, the trade war with China and other countries. The coronavirus poses its own particular problems for different farmers. For corn and soybean farmers, there's concern about getting the crops in and getting help for the harvest. Joel DeYoung is an Iowa State University Extension Service field agronomist in Lamar's. DeYoung says the price of commodities is still a concern for corn and soybean farmers.
The prices of commodities obviously have been dropping pretty significantly in the last 2 months, 3 months, since about the first of the year, the first of February. We've seen commodity prices drop 15, 20, 25, 30%, depending on the commodity. So that is by far the biggest one. If you've got to sell commodities to make payments and things like that, it gets pretty tough. And that's been the issue. The other one is just it's not been a good farm economy for several years. So attitudes are a little on the suppressed side, you could say. And then if you add in another factor on top of it, it just is kind of tough to slog through it year after year. So we're wondering about, usually at this time of year, farmers are very upbeat and very optimistic. The COVID-19 certainly has that thought process subdued as we look into this growing season.
I think of the farmers that I grew up with and farmers I know that are still out there, and I think of them out in their big tractor and they're planting or they're doing this or that, and they're, I always think of them being sort of always a little bit social distanced anyway because of the nature of what they do. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, they're not working right next shoulder to shoulder to somebody like we see in many of the factory type situations. So they do have some distance from each other. They're able to maintain a 6-foot distance as they're communicating, maybe with employees, maybe with the guy that's delivering the seed. So that allows them to keep some of that social distancing intact in place, even while they're getting the job done. And we will see the crop. We will see the crop get planted this year. I don't think there's any doubt, but I think the one thing I'd like to encourage farmers to think about is what happens if you show up with that? How are you going to get that crop planted in a timely basis if you're not able to do it yourself? So that's something that I hope they're thinking about right now.
So if they're ill?
Yeah, if they happen to get the coronavirus themselves, how are they going to handle getting that crop done on a timely basis? But what I honestly think would happen if we have some people that end up getting the coronavirus on the farm, I think what's going to happen is neighbors are going to do like they always have in a type of emergencies. Neighbors will pitch in and will help. So it's always one of the things to think about is what's your backup plan?
I know that dairy farmers are getting together with the USDA. They've got a plan. Other states have already put into place this plan to help the dairy farmers there. What about the corn and soybean farmers? Is there anything going on with them?
Not per se that I can think of. You know, there's always the concern about what's going on with the markets, et cetera. But most farmers have their smaller group of employees or themselves or family members that get the crop planted and taking care of this time of year. They have to rely on commercial applicators to get some of that work done. And right now they're subdued, but business appears to be going on as usual. I think the concern a little bit is, are we going to get the needed resources we need to get that crop in the ground? And so far it looks like the seeds being delivered, pesticides that are needed are being delivered. So right now it looks to be pretty good. We just hope that pipeline of delivery of products continues.
Folks in Extension used to always go out to the farm, but you know, now you can meet with farmers online, you can Zoom, obviously you can talk on the phone. Does that help you out?
It helps. You know, I get more text questions than I ever used to. I get more phone call questions. That's some of the way to do it. But in reality, once the crop comes up and we have to troubleshoot, more than likely we'll be walking fields. We're just going to have to try to keep a distance between us when we're trying to assess what's going on in a field. So Extension's still working. We're not doing much face-to-face at this stage of the game, and any work we do is going to have to be at a distance from clients to try to reduce that risk.
That was Iowa State University Extension Service field agronomist Joel DeYoung talking about how the coronavirus pandemic could affect corn and soybean farmers and prices for those commodities this season. And dairy farmers are also dealing with problems related to COVID-19 because schools have closed, restaurants have closed for in-service dining, so the demand for milk has declined 10 to 15%. Grocery stores only use a limited amount of milk as well. In some states, dairy owners have been dumping milk and eating the loss. Well, here in Iowa, we have 1,000 dairy farmers who have not yet had to dump their milk. Iowa State University Extension agent and dairy specialist Fred Hall of Orange City says he hopes it will not come to that. Hall explains the circumstances causing dairies to cut down on production and how the USDA is helping out, but he admits the oversupply is likely to continue for a while.
Yeah, at least for the short run, they're going to continue. I mean, raw milk goes from the farmer to a processor, and they have sold product either to restaurant, you know, they package it for restaurant. A good example is always, you know, you and I buy a 4-quarter-pound box of butter, but restaurants buy the little packages, little pads. So once it's in that form, it really doesn't transfer to home use. So, you know, that's just one example. Once it's in the system, if they don't sell that product, then it becomes storage. And there's a finite amount of storage. So once that's full, they either shutter the plant or redirect milk. Same way with the fluid milk. You know, the schools, the hospitals, they don't buy gallon jugs or half gallons. They buy it in the institutional container. So once they've got the milk into that container and it's headed to the hospital or school or whatever, that's a destination. You know, they can't recall it, rebottle it into gallons. So, you know, when there's an overnight change, then those plants have to reorganize or send milk to a plant that's making gallon jugs for the home consumer. So that all plays in, and that's why you're seeing the stories of, you know, plant or producers having to dump milk.
I remember looking at photographs from the Depression around here where, you know, up in Lamar's, they're dumping milk and there was a protest. And, you know, I think that just sort of reminds people of terrible times. But it does sound like, from what I've read, that dairy farmers were reaching out to the Department of Agriculture. Is that right?
You bet. One of the big things that we would like to see happen is the government increase purchases to put dairy products into food pantries. You know, we've already got this system producing gallon jugs, and as people get out of work and are going to utilize the pantries and the food supply from the government, if we can make that shift, then that'll help everybody out. Because believe me, I've milked cows twice a day, almost the majority of my adult life, and it puts tears in your eyes when you got to pop the plunger and watch that milk go down the drain. You know, the guys can't turn the cows off. So, yeah, they need to sell it to stay in business, but it's a pretty good alternative to put it into folks' hands who really need it instead of put it into the down the drain.
So what is the likelihood that this might happen?
Well, it's already happening in states surrounding Iowa. I know several of the milk buyers in the state have sent letters out saying we've got to reduce the amount of milk that we're picking up. The option we don't want to do is have you dump milk, so help us control production. Nebraska, Wisconsin, Florida, you know, a lot of states are already dumping milk, but to my knowledge, I have not heard of anyone dumping in the state of Iowa.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to know how many dairy farmers there are in Iowa.
Yeah, I think they don't always associate, you know, the total number of people who are depending upon milking cows.
That was Iowa State University Extension agent and dairy specialist Fred Hall of Orange City talking about the issues farmers are having since the coronavirus pandemic caused the shutdown of schools and restaurants to big markets for those farmers. More than 100,000 Iowans filed for unemployment benefits in the first 2 weeks of massive business closings during the coronavirus outbreak. Iowa Workforce Development called the situation staggering. People from all kinds of backgrounds are wondering when they will go back to work. Many rely on seeing people face-to-face for their livelihoods, including singer-songwriter and music teacher Mike Langley. Sioux City artist tells Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer how he has modified his business in this new age of isolation.
Before St. Patrick's Day, or maybe 10 days out, I started to realize that I was going to have to cancel all my St. Patrick's Day gigs and didn't see how I was going to get around that. So then I got a hold of my friends who were expecting me to come play, and I explained I couldn't do it. They understood, and then like dominoes, everybody around started doing the same thing and started to make sense. So I've lost out on lots of gigs, quite a lot of money, you know, over $1,000 so far. All my summer gigs, that's really a busy time of year for me. Usually have a steady Friday gig at Four Brothers, play a lot of shows at the Dakota Dunes Country Club and various private parties around the area, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be impacted. So I'm really looking at switching my business over. And so far I've made a few inroads, but, you know, there's a lot of work to be done.
What kind of things are you doing to try to stay afloat, to have that income come in?
Maintaining my position as a guitar teacher at Morningside College, because they've gone fully online for the rest of the semester. And so I've got about a dozen students, and I maintain my lessons with them on video chat.
Okay, so the capo is on the fourth fret, and I got a G shape and then a C, but I'm keeping the pinky down here, and now I'm using thumb and just index.
And through emails, diagrams, and sending links to songs and whatnot. And I have a few of my private students that used to come over to my place, to my private studio. And so some of them have kept on with me, so that's great. So we do the video chat thing as well. I've been trying to promote that on, I think Facebook is kind of the main channel to get a hold of people. So, and I have set up a PayPal account so people can easily send me money to pay me for lessons, or even, you know, I've been looking into live concerts like the one that that I did the Sunday before last at the Lewis and Clark Betty Strong Center down on the river. So it was a live Facebook stream.
Start off with a song I wrote several years ago called Life is Cool.
It turned out to be a really nice show, and we had more than 1,000 people tune in to that live stream, so that was beneficial to everyone. And I'm hoping that there's some other organizations out there that would be interested in having me do something similar. I'd sure be willing to, as long as I can safely get someplace and safely social distance, you know.
I think even the Marquee had musicians performing.
I saw something about that. Good for them.
It's still probably pretty hard because you're kind of used to having the energy from an audience that you feed off on. So what was it like to kind of play to an empty room?
Well, it just took imagination, that's all. I just looked through the phone, and Mike McCormick was sitting out there, you know, chatting with me between songs. So I just imagined the people in the audience, and I sang to them.
Fly your soul feel, swimming free in heaven's pool.
And now the federal government, it appears that they are going to have some kind of benefit for people who are self-employed like you, artists and musicians.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I signed up on the Iowa workforce page there and got some stuff back. I have to wait and see what happens with the CARES program. You know, and that'll only be a fraction of what I usually make in the summer.
So you've had to cancel some of your gigs. How far out have you canceled those shows, Mike?
Well, I still have some shows booked in May. We were going to go on a little tour of Ireland in May and June, but we had to cancel that too. And of course, WIT, the Lifelong Learning Program. Mara Hall had my dad and myself play for several years now, X amount of concerts per year, usually in the spring and fall. So these spring ones, I don't know if they'll happen. Maybe we can find a way to turn that into a video show, but the St. Patrick's show was canceled. That was right in the thick of the beginning of the closing.
And of course, you have a real love for Ireland because you were going to go there, and that's obviously unfortunate that you weren't able to take part in it this year.
Yeah, this would have been the 10-year anniversary tour, in a way. And it's not happening. Of course, a lot of our friends that we meet in County Mayo on the west coast of Ireland, we meet them there to play and play gigs in several locations. One of them is Matt Malloy's pub in Westport. So they've got a hold of me and said, yeah, they've had to cancel as well. Everybody's staying put.
And Mike, when it comes to music, it seems like it's kind of a harder way to make a living these days. I know you're talented. You probably have more opportunities than most musicians. But I think the way music has evolved over the years, I know with my husband, he says a lot of musicians are getting paid what they made 20 years or more ago.
He is right. Yeah, well, that's pretty much been the case, at least here in Sioux City and surrounding areas. I mean, you know, to make $150 a gig is what I've always strived for. Ever since I was going to Morningside College in the 80s. So it hasn't changed much.
You are a prolific songwriter, and you're always getting inspired by different things. I know you send us quite a few songs throughout the year that we try to get on the air. Have you written any music when it comes to what you're experiencing now?
I wrote a song for my wife's birthday, To the Heart of Life.
Birthday girl, you're my angel, you're my whole world.
That was when this was all starting, and that song was about, you know, just getting to the core of things and trying to focus on the beauty and the love in life and the real purpose of it, especially as the fear's growing that, who knows, you know, I don't want to be a pessimist, but who knows what's going to happen here, so it's very much a carpe diem experience. Seize the day.
I wish you the best of luck, Mike.
Thanks, Sheila. I really appreciate it.
Travel with me the sea and sky.
That was musician and music teacher and composer Mike Langley. You can check out Mike Langley Music on Facebook. Also, MikeLangley.com. Well, this is Holy Week. It's kind of easy to forget that in amongst the coronavirus pandemic and the isolation. A lot of churches and other houses of worship in Sioux City have already been shut down to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. As Holy Week continues, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Sioux City and the other churches are offering daily and Sunday Masses online, and they're also offering services Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. Susan O'Brien is with the Diocese of Sioux City. She says there will be Masses online also in several languages.
Yes, so they're doing multilingual services. Bishop will be part of those for some, not all. So the one, I think the Easter Vigil is the one I believe they're doing the 9 readings, all languages, you know, that type of thing. So it'll be all inclusive. But yeah, I mean, just trying to offer as much as you can to people in the community and even outside our community, if it works for them to tune in to what we have to offer. And then I know many of the parishes around the diocese have their own schedule.
And they have the app now, the My Parish app, a lot of parishes have. And do you think that this is a good way for a lot of Catholic churches and dioceses across the country? It seems like this has really kind of given a big push to go into online services and all sorts of ways to sort of reach out and interact with people.
Certainly we want people to come to Mass, you know, every Sunday. But I think too, for the homebound or people in maybe a nursing home where they don't have Mass every day and every Sunday, this has offered them a really great way to watch online. I think the silver lining definitely has been that the parishes are reaching out in different ways. Like you mentioned, the My Parish app, that's been a huge help just to get the word out in text message. And then just making sure that their websites are current, that, you know, things that they honestly sometimes don't have time for, and not saying that this is in any way a good situation, but it did give everybody kind of a time to take a breath and kind of communicate a little bit differently, and maybe things that should have been there or will enhance what they're doing when everything kind of returns to normal, whatever that's going to be.
And that was Susan O'Brien from the Diocese, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Sioux City, talking about online services this week for Holy Week. You're listening to Siouxland Public Media, KWIT Sioux City 90.3 and KOJI Okoboji 90.7, broadcasting from the campus of Western Iowa Tech Community College. And that is it for The Exchange. Be sure to join us next week. You can also go online to kwit.org for more information. I'm Mary Hartnett.